We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast is brought to you by Aspers Casino Newcastle, home of the Mag's £4 pint, available on all draft beers for all NUFC home and televised games, 12 p.m. to 12 a.m. Over 18s only, visit begamblerware.org. Be drink aware for details and T's and C's, visit aspersnewcastle.co.uk. It's your True Faith Newcastle United podcast, and Newcastle managed a draw against Luton Town at home Saturday afternoon in what was a pretty exhausting game. Here to analyse it, I'm Charlotte. I'm joined by Si, Adam and Norman. Before we get into it, a reminder, we are on Patreon. It is between £3 and £8 a month for loads of extra content, loads of analysis. We'll be doing even more analysis of this game on there. So do come over and join us. It is a wonderful platform full of wonderful content. So please do consider it. But let's talk about this game, this absolutely insane game. Simon, where do we even start? There's a lot to talk about. I think we have to get straight into it, don't we, with the sort of, I think the big questions are the midfield and the Dan Byrne question, right? Mm. So let's talk about it. We were supposed to be fixed, right?
I don't want to talk about it.
Right.
I'm not ready.
Great podcast. No, yeah. The end.
That first question, what just happened? Like, yeah, I don't know. It's taken 24 hours for me to try and get my head around what's happened. I've watched the Match of the Day highlights this morning. I still don't really understand how that game of football, a thrilling 4-4, played out, because it was a crap 4-4. Me and Norman were talking before we started. It's a rubbish 4-4 for so many reasons. You're right, there's so much to get into. So yeah, let's get started. I thought, what was weird about it is that we started off so comfortably, you know, with the home team. We got the goal, albeit, you know, it was a bit cagey at that point, but we got the first goal, probably deservedly. Great finish from Longstaff, by the way. We'll talk a lot about Longstaff. I'd like to. And then out of nowhere, we just sort of lost impetus and kept making stupid, stupid mistakes. That's one of the worst defensive performances I think I've ever seen from Newcastle. There's lots of reasons for it, and I'm loath to dig out too many players, but we're going to talk about some individuals, obviously, as this podcast goes on. And Dan Byrne is the main talking point, such as being the fallout from the game and the way it kind of transpired. You know, just making silly mistakes. Even the first goal, that's not a Dan Byrne problem. Actually, Botman gives away a really stupid free kick. We defend the set piece horribly and they score. And it's like, we've let them back in the game. Okay. And we reacted really well. Scored immediately again. Longstaff again.
Yes, well done.
And then their second goal was even more embarrassing. Like, it's probably the worst defended goal I think I've ever seen from start to finish, their second goal.
And so can we put Longstaff at fault for that?
Slightly. Yeah. So I'm gonna reel off who's at fault for that goal. So Murphy is the first player to Barkley. Just misses him. Doesn't make any kind of attempt to tackle him. Longstaff then just runs straight past Barkley. Doesn't manage to tackle him. Just runs across his path. Does a little bit to get in his way, I suppose, like woo, and then just out the way, out the game. Then Barkley proceeds to run forward in a straight line, 30 yards. No one else comes to him. Like, you can see Longstaff's missed the tackle. Why does Botman, Cher, or even Trippier not come towards the player? No one does. Then eventually Botman panics and goes, shit, I better go. At the same time, Kieran Trippier comes away from his man. So they all come at the same time. So then the lad on the left is left free, comes back across to Barkley, who they've all moved to the lad with the ball and left Barkley free again. It's just, the whole thing was an absolute shambles. It's one of the worst goals I think I've ever seen us concede, and that kind of set the tone for the rest of the game. And yeah, there's some nice things about it. Barnes came back and scored. We came back from 4-2 down. That is good in the Premier League. That's a hard thing to do against anybody. You know, let's not disrespect Luton. They're a good side and they played really well. And then I think that's 4 wins and 6 for them now. You know, that's a really good return for a side that's been battling relegation all season.
They didn't win.
Sorry, yes. Well, sorry. Yeah. The 3 wins and 5. It's another point.
No, but it's interesting.
It feels like a defeat.
Right, yeah, exactly. It feels like a defeat.
So yeah, my head's all over the place with this one, clearly. And I'm not quite ready, but here we are. I don't know.
We're gonna use this as some kind of like to try and make sense of it, try and have some catharsis here. Adam, what do you reckon? We were supposed to be fine. It's one game a week now. We're not as tired. What on earth happened?
The thing is, after a hard-fought draw at Villa Park on Tuesday, the exact fixture that you want is a 3 p.m. home kickoff against a relegation threatened side.
We beat Villa.
Yeah, I know. After
the draw, I guess you mean.
Sorry, no. A hard-fought win at Villa Park. Yeah, my bad. Already getting confused because of the confusion of...
It feels like we've just lost 2 games. We haven't actually lost this week, but we've lost 2 games in our minds.
What we wanted was a home fixture against a side looking at relegation, and that's what we got. And we got the perfect start as well, because if we were worried that Luton were going to sit in a low block... and we're going to find it really, really difficult to break them down. What's the perfect? We score an early goal. Perfect. Conditions are perfect. Mm. Everyone's in a good mood. It's good weather. And we've got an early goal. Yes, they react and get one back through their set piece prowess, which we know is always going to be a threat because they're a team full of massive lads.
They're huge.
Absolutely huge. And that physicality became a problem for us throughout the game, I thought. But you're right. We reacted really well again. And got ahead 2 minutes later. And that should have been it. That should have been kick on. But we were creating so many chances, but we were not clinical at all. Now, Luton managed more shots on target yesterday with 8, and we had 6 in the end, and we had 19 shots altogether. That's a really poor return. It's a really poor ratio. And I'm sorry, you can't keep conceding so many goals at home to the likes of, you know, bottom half clubs like Nottingham Forest and Luton, 7 in 2 games. In those two specific fixtures and expect European football. You can't. We need that defensive rigidity. It was missing yesterday. We weren't tracking midfielders. In fact, a lot of the goals yesterday for both sides came from not tracking midfielders, a couple of long staffs, obviously. But the second goal we conceded was appalling, I thought. Yeah. I was really, really irritated by how we defended that second goal. And the third one was just absolute chaos. The fourth one was absolute chaos. It was, you know, once again, leaving a man free on the wide area. We'd pushed forward because we were maybe overcompensating for not finishing a lot of these chances, and we took more risks because of it, and it left more space for them to exploit. And they just seemed so comfortable on the ball. They seemed so happy to have the ball, and I think the fact that they had much higher possession percentage meant that was probably one of the reasons that we did find it. We were a lot more tired than we otherwise would have been, because we're used to having a lot more of the ball at St James's Park, and we didn't yesterday, and it affected us, and Luton just weren't fazed at all, and they just seemed to grow in confidence when we were trying to rattle them and get in their faces, and they just played around us, and we found it so, so difficult.
You've all covered a lot of what I would have said. So first and foremost, I'll talk about Luton Town very quickly, because Rob Edwards and the job that he's done at that club with those players that he's got and the big serious lack of money is spectacular, right? They came to St James's Park yesterday, and I think overall they were the better team, and just kudos, right? Everything we're going to say about Newcastle today, it's a Newcastle United podcast, fair enough, but Luton Town were superb, and Edwards is clearly someone who knows what he's doing. We couldn't cope with them. Like, the midfield is especially frightening because they're completely bullied with it. And I look at that Lukonga yesterday, who they got on loan from Arsenal. That's the kind of player that we're really lacking at the minute. I think we have someone like him in the midfield. You know, Calvin Phillips, we're linked with him, right? He plays midfield, we'll probably win. In midfield yesterday featuring Sandro Tonali and or both, Joe Willock, probably wins that game. Another huge mitigating circumstance, and I hate looking for excuses, but I have to. It's the only way I can make sense of this. Again, we've seen how important Nick Pope is to this Newcastle United team. This isn't me saying it was Dubravka's fault we lost yesterday, by the way, but what Pope gives us is utterly irreplaceable, and we've seen it for what, the best part of 3 months now, Pope in goal for that game. Again, I don't think we come out that conceding 4 goals, and necessarily, I keep referring to losing, but we actually drew, didn't we? We've got to remember we drew. All right, there's some excuses for you, but ultimately the lack of quality in the game, I think, is emphasised by the report on the BBC website. I don't know if anyone saw it, Longstaff gets two goals, right? He gets a rating of 4.69, which is incredible, right? I mean, you know, you get two goals in a Premier League match from midfield, you're looking, normally you'd be getting a 7 or 8, but that's how poor the performance was overall. The goal that you mentioned, Si, the way that you described it there, you know what I started thinking? If you see like an adaptation of a West End musical on like on film, and there's like people just flying in front of each other and someone's singing in the middle. Bartley's running down the middle, singing a big number, and the players are just flying past him like dancers. That's exactly what happened. Spectacularly bad. It's really difficult to look at yesterday's game and dig the positives out, and we'll get into it. The only positives for me were a two-goal deficit in the Premier League, regardless of the opposition, come back from it, is a good thing. And also, obviously, Harvey Barnes coming back was fantastic to see. But overall, very difficult to walk away from that, thinking we've still got an opportunity to finish top five. We haven't, in my opinion. We finishing sixth would be one heck of an achievement based on really what we've seen for most of the season, but especially on yesterday's performance, combined with Nottingham Forest at home as well. As Adam mentioned, conceding 7 goals in 2 games against teams such as Luton and Nottingham Forest. Again, not denigrating them, but that is really difficult to kind of think, okay, we'll definitely finish in the top six. We've got a great chance when you are conceding that amount of goals to teams such as Forest and Luton.
I think the midfield question is interesting, because I did see the player ratings for Longstaff, and I was kind of like, yeah, it's probably about right, because he scored 2 goals but didn't do a lot else. And it's one of Ben's main gripes with Longstaff is that he just can't tackle anyone, and neither can Miley really. In fact, Lewis Miley made 1 tackle yesterday, and Harvey Barnes got the ball and we scored. It's like, you can do it, just tackle the cunts.
Wow.
And then Bruno can't commit a tackle because he's on 9 yellows, and we just literally can't afford for him to be banned for 2 games. So we've got 3 midfielders who have to just try and shepherd players around and move players around without... I mean, no, Longstaff and Miley, there's no excuse. They've known about this problem for weeks. They should be being taught every week. Just commit tackles, just do something. And I know that what a Longstaff might say is, well, if I dive in and get taken on, I'm going to look silly. You know, if you're not confident making a tackle, the best you can do is shepherd a player and make sure you're goal side and make it hard for them. But we didn't even make it hard for Luton players to come through our midfield yesterday. And that's a frustrating thing. Just put one on him. When Barkley's ran past you 4 times, wipe him out, kick him, kick his ankles. Like, just make him at least not want to come past you as easily as he did. So that midfield continues to be a problem in that it just can't tackle. We never ever turn over possession in midfield unless it's a nice interception. Whereas, you know, other teams just nick the ball off us all the time and then come through. So that's probably the biggest problem. That it's nice that Longstaff scoring goals now. The first finish in particular was brilliant. Second one, he didn't seem to know as much about it. He just kind of, you know, it dropped to him and he scored. Very fortunate, I suppose. But took it well. That is our biggest problem. I know we're going to talk about the left back situation as well. And there was a problem there, and we did solve it with some substitutions. But I think that midfield is going to continue to get overrun because of the too similar. That's 3 players who are you know, useful on the ball, have a decent touch, and pick a pass. And Longstaff's got the legs and the energy, and he can cover loads of ground and do lots of that work. But ultimately, none of them can break up the play. And none of them have got like the Willock kind of flair to kind of open up teams. So they're just 3 similar midfielders, and they're the only midfielder he's got, and that's going to continue to be a problem, like you say, Norman, until we get Willock back.
And obviously, I forgot to mention, I mean, Joe Linton, hugely important in games like that, right? Yeah. Against the physicality of that Luton midfield. But one we can rescue it is somebody bring John Joe back from his Turkish holiday, because he would have taken Barkley straight out of the game, wouldn't he? But you know what? On a more serious note, we seem to have lost that ability. And I've noticed that this season, especially the last few months, that when Howe first came in, and I would say for about 2/3 of last season, we were becoming masters of the dark arts. The shithousery was absolutely spectacular. And it seems to have disappeared. I don't know if anyone's noticed it. And maybe that is because the midfield is a little bit lightweight, but it's just not there anymore. You know, like, I'm going to take a yellow card because this is the most sensible thing to do. Luton were actually brilliant at it yesterday. Their time wasting was absolutely spectacular. God, and that little bit of nastiness was great. And that the reality is, top level football, that is, it's really important component of the game. And we just seem to have kind of dropped off in that sense recently. We're starting to get back to being a little bit too nice. And I want to see we get nasty again.
Yeah, agreed. And I think you see that with Lewis Miley and the lack of tackling and things like that. There's a bit of a deference. There's a bit of too much respect given to the opponents when you kind of just want to see like nasty bastards getting in there. We've talked a little bit about the midfield there, and you know, it's the same story, isn't it? We saw it with Man City. Okay, it's Kevin De Bruyne, and you can sort of say, oh, it's Kevin De Bruyne. But then you saw it with Gibbs, who's rubbish for Forest. And like, not, you know, again, I don't want to be nasty about it, but like these are teams, to Adam's point earlier, that we should not be conceding. We should not be allowing like so much space through the midfield. But it's also exactly what we should be learning from. We've seen this like in two games recently and we're seeing it again and nothing is changing. And I know that there is a personnel issue. At one point in the first half, Bruno was, he'd gone down and he was clutching his sort of, it's clutching his abdomen a bit. And I was like, if he comes off, I don't know what we do. Like, I don't know who comes. Joe White from the bench maybe comes on and in the midfield. Otherwise, somebody moves. I don't know what our options are there. So there is that element to it as well. But I also want to talk in this first bit about Dan Burn and about that left-hand side, because I think that speaks to the in-game management a lot. People were crying out on social media, in my WhatsApp groups, for Dan Burn to be subbed off. He was being smoked every single time by their seven. Forgive me, I can't remember his name.
Ogbeni,
who I think is on loan from Man City. No, have I got that wrong?
He's a free transfer from Rotherham United.
Really?
This preseason. I mean, he started off like in Ireland. He's an Irish international. He was in Brentford for a bit, had a bit of a lower league career, and he's really sort of come to the fore this season. I think he's actually quite a sensational player.
So he is. Someone texted me and was like, he's on loan from our city. And I was like, oh, that makes sense, because he's absolutely brilliant. He was absolutely excellent yesterday.
He's much, much faster.
So fast.
He's one of the fastest players in the league, actually. Yeah. I think he genuinely is one of those. Yeah.
Sorry to butt in, but like, so against Dan Burn, you already know Dan Burn has a pace issue, right? There are games built for Dan Burn. That was not one of them. That was not the opponent for Dan Burn. And you know, we saw this tweet from George Culkin that Dan was at this Alan Shearer event last night, and Alan Shearer sort of went, oh, Dan was missing from 3 p.m. today, and he sort of took it like in stride. And that's a nice thing, you know, he's able to have the piss ripped out of him. But is it a nice thing? Is that a good thing? We don't really... Is that good?
It's a funny one, that the George Culkin tweet, because one of the comments is... how he was you know, putrid, I think is the word that was used. And I was like, I don't like to see that, but he was described as putrid. And then George responds saying, well, he was the man of the match on Tuesday or against game. Fulham last week. You know, it is a different game, but sometimes that is football. You've got to kind of take the rough with the smooth. You know, he's not going to have a brilliant game every week. putrid, I know. It's an awful word. And I would never describe any Newcastle player as putrid. I would describe the previous manager, but that's a different story. The Dan Burn situation, yes, we could all see it happening. That is the frustration. It needed to change. And there is a problem there if two games running, you're having to bring your left back off because there's a problem there. The same thing happened at Villa, and that's not a good way to approach football if in games you're having to take your left back off because you can see it's a problem and it's been a problem from the start. But there's more to the Dan Burn situation. I think Dan Burn was left high and dry by some of his teammates. And that, again, that isn't a criticism necessarily, but you had Lewis Miley in front of him, who we've just said can't make a tackle, doesn't really provide any support to his left back. And then it was Miggy first half, who does a lot of running, but he's not great defensively. You know, he works hard. And then the second half, after Gordon goes off, it's Jacob Murphy on the left, who's just back from injury, not familiar with the left-hand side of the pitch, really. And again, not going to offer any support. So it was kind of Dan Burn up against their winger and anyone else. He had a lot to deal with. And that did need addressing sooner. I'm not saying that we should have just let Dan Burn stay on the pitch and protect him. I think that the subs had to be made probably sooner. But there's more to the problem than just Dan Burn. And yes, it was just a simple case of the lad is like three times faster than him. And it was, you know, the I can't remember if it's the third or fourth goal, the one where he just runs and... Oh, it's for the penalty. He starts like 10 yards behind Dan Burn and ends up 5 yards ahead of him, and he has to pull him back. And it is really stupid from Burn, but he was just like, we could all see the problem. His teammates know that he's not going to keep up with him. So why is no one getting across there to help him? So there's more to it, in my opinion, albeit, yes, we had to hook him, and Livramento is a much better footballer. And at some point, we're going to have to just sort of say, like, you know what? Tino's the choice for these games. Dan Burn, great at Fulham. Great for certain situations against, you know, more, less quick, but kind of more teams that play high and cross the ball a lot. He's great for stuff like that. He's not good for teams that have a fast winger who runs on the floor. Runs on the floor, you know what I mean? Runs with the ball on the deck.
To this guy.
and yeah, it was the wrong fit, and it was the wrong fit again. There's a problem that we need to solve there. But yeah, I want to kind of spread, not the blame, but caveat what's going on there.
Well, 100%. And Adam, I'll bring you in. But the thing is, yes, there could be more support for Dan Byrne from his teammates, 100%. I absolutely agree with that. There is somebody in charge, though. There is somebody in charge who's supposed to be watching the game and managing the game. And to sit, to stand on the sidelines with Tindall and not make a change until Luton have four goals, that is astonishing to me. And we'll talk about it, but Adam, please.
What you can't do is give yourself a pat on the back for Tuesday night and making that really important tactical tweak that helped us contain the game and quelled the threat of Leon Bailey by tucking Byrne inside and bringing Tino on. Brilliant move, really reactive, and it worked for us and it helped us get all 3 points. When you don't learn from that same mistake and you put Dan Byrne up against, as we've said, one of the fastest wingers in the Premier League, what do you expect to happen? You're setting him up for a fall. Now, if he hasn't got the pace, what he needs to do is adjust his positioning. Mm. This kind of happened with Paul Dummett, I believe, in the Championship. He was really, really slow, didn't have the pace, but Rafa kind of tweaked him so that he sort of just sat a bit deeper, so that he didn't need to rely on his pace more. He was kind of just in a much more conservative position. And that needs to have happened this time, whereas, you know, you look at the fourth goal. Dan Byrne is just, I don't even know where he is. He's in the final third somewhere. And they basically break, and then they're countering. They pass it on the line, pass it on the line, pass it on the line, and then the guy's free and tucks it in for four. Now, you can't give yourself a pat on the back for Villa Park if you're then just not going to learn from that same mistake again. I understand the merits of having someone like Dan Byrne, and when you haven't got the likes of Joe Linton in there, a big lad, a tall lad, then you're going to need someone who is tall, and maybe he is there on his merit. But I think a lot of this comes back to the point that a lot of our players, because we were playing at home, because we were playing at St James's Park, we were really, really complacent. And maybe we took more risks. And maybe it was a bit of arrogance that we didn't think that Luton were going to pose that much of a threat, or we could absorb it and move on and do our thing. But Luton's dictated that game a lot more than I think we expected them to. And if you can see that happening, the way he pushed him over, Dan Byrne, like, we all knew what was going to happen before it happened. Everyone in the stadium knew what was going to happen, seemingly except Eddie Howe, who didn't bring him off again. And the absolute latest that Dan Byrne should have stayed on was after he received his yellow card, he conceded the penalty. That's when you bring Livermento on at the very, very latest. But honestly, the same mistakes again, it's foolhardy, man. It's really, really silly, and it got me very, very irritated. It's not completely Dan Byrne's fault, because it's not his fault that his wingers are pacey, but you've got to then change where you stand, or you've got to somehow nullify that exposure, because otherwise you concede four. And yes, we conceded the fourth goal, and 2 minutes later, Dan Byrne comes off. The horse is bolted. It's after the fact. That is too late once again.
The funny thing, sorry, Norman, just before you come in, that when he said, where's Dan Byrne to the fourth goal, he just intercepted a pass from Trippier to Barnes or someone. Like, he intercepted our own pass, and then they break because he just got in the way. Like, he couldn't have had a bigger mare if he tried for that in that moment. Comedy moments, you know, he's obviously not trying to get in the way, but what was more frustrating about that, yes, so Byrne's out of position, and we just didn't react. Luton, four or five players just came at us, and we were kind of jogging back. I just thought that the effort, we were shell-shocked at going 3-2 down, but there was just no leadership, no organisation. I just felt like we could have dealt with that situation even with Dan Byrne lying on the floor in their half. I think, you know, the rest of the team have got to kind of hold themselves and go, right, we know Byrne's out of position. We should have reorganised and dealt with that, and they didn't. I thought defensively we were just awful across the board. And yes, the Byrne problem was a problem that had to be solved, but I just was really frustrated at how we dealt with all of those situations.
Well, I mean, that ties into the lack of players like Willock and Joe Linton, right, with their box-to-box abilities and their stamina. There's no point in commenting further on the Dan Byrne talk because it's been covered, right? But what I will say is, in terms of support, I think yesterday what another issue was, the centre-halves couldn't really go and cover him, Shea and Botman, because they were absolutely not mullered by Morrison and Adebayo. Yeah. It's as simple as that. That was almost like a template of how to play against Botman and Shea, despite their sizes. I mean, Botman's like, what, 7'2"? I mean, given how short I am, anyone over 6 foot is at least 7 foot. But they were completely out-muscled. And that's the first time I've actually read a match report where Botman's been dug out by the journalist writing it. Louise Taylor said Botman had a poor game. And I started thinking about it. I was thought, actually, it's right. It's almost like, but we never think of Botman having a bad game ever. But yesterday's the first time I've looked back and thought, you know what? They were done by Morris and Adebayo completely. And again, that is going to impact on the right and left sides of the pitch, right? Trippier's bombing up the pitch at Lourdes yesterday. Byrne is getting caught out all the time. Those two centre-halves aren't able for 1 second to take the eyes off the big lads up top for Luton, and that kind of contributed to the fact that Luton just destroyed them out wide. And also, obviously, Ross Barkley was ridiculously good yesterday. He was allowed to be, fair enough.
I think there's so much more that we could talk about here. And there's also an Eddie Howe question that we haven't really touched on. We've sort of tried to, but there's so much to talk about. So, of course, that will be on our Patreon review show, kind of getting into that. We're going to break there, I think, for part one. A reminder from us, if you would like to hear more of this sort of thing, you want to get more analysis, please do come and join us on Patreon. It's between £3 and £5 a month. We would love to have you there. We'll be back with part two and try and find some positives, I think, in part two after these messages.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to be more active this summer? Sierra helps you save on everything from swimsuits to stand-up paddle boards, tennis rackets to fishing tackle. And if that doesn't float your boat, we also have pool floats. Sierra, let's get moving. To your local store, like now. Go!
Part two of the show, and I think we should try and find some positives. Obviously, we got a point. It was a draw. It felt like a loss. We've talked about that, but it was a draw. And it's really interesting, I think, that it feels like a loss, because actually what we did yesterday was we went ahead, we went behind, and then we went 4-2 behind. And coming back from that to get a point is something to be celebrated, isn't it? Like, isn't that something to be celebrated?
It's funny, isn't it? In the context of this season, it was disappointing because we thought we were meant to kick on from Villa, and because of the amount of points we've dropped during that horrible spell of the end of November right the way through to all January is a write-off because it was Liverpool and Man City, fine. We thought we're going to have to turn a corner, and we all know that we're going to have to go on a run where we win 5 or 6 games in a row to really get ourselves back. So that's why a draw doesn't feel acceptable. If we'd drawn 4-4 at home to Luton or anyone else in the middle of last season's kind of big runs, would have been okay with it. And we'd say, oh, you know, it's great that we came back from 4-2 down. It's the nature of the season we're in. It's the nature of the way we conceded the goals, I suppose, as well. But it just felt like a defeat. And it even had Adam convinced before that we hadn't even beaten Villa. That's how much it's affected us. But there are some positives to be taken. You're right. You know, normally, if Newcastle go 4-2 down at home, and especially having witnessed what happened against Nottingham Forest on Boxing Day, at least we showed some fight. At least we did something. And I suppose the ability to bring players off the bench has helped that. And that's a positive. The fact that we've got Barnes back. Wilson came on. I didn't see too much from him, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, he's always a bit rusty when he first comes back. 45 minutes under his belt is probably a good thing for him. Barnes was great for 20 minutes and then looked a bit tired by the time we got into stoppage time. I think what was frustrating about stoppage time, because we gave ourselves enough time to win that game, didn't we? You know, the last 15 minutes should have been enough time to get a fifth goal, but we were spent, and it's no good in the Premier League at home to a bottom four side needing to score in stoppage time. You can't really rely on that. So, you know, we didn't get what we needed. And as Norm mentioned earlier, I think Luton managed that stoppage time brilliantly. The 10 minutes passed without us really touching the ball because they just sorted it out. But positive wise, yes.
Come on.
We scored 4 goals. We scored 4 decent goals. We've talked about how badly we defended, but I thought we looked like a team who can score for fun if we need to. Mm. You know, we score 4 goals in St. James's Park. You should normally win the game. You should win the game 99 times out of 100. This was just a weird occasion where we didn't defend properly. So there's positive to be taken. I don't think we need to lose our heads. 4 points from this week, Villa away and Luton, is kind of absolutely acceptable. You would have taken it at the start of the week. So
it's the fight. Yeah. Like I have to take a positive. I'm a sunny side of the street person anyway, but I have to take a positive from the fact that we showed fight. Exactly what you were saying about that Forest game. That could have been a much, much worse defeat. It could have been awful. Even 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, that scoreline going 4-2 behind, you just sort of think, oh fuck, they're gonna score so many more than this. We're not gonna get back into this game. And we did, and we made some changes, and yes, the changes were late, and there's questions about that in-game management, and could we have won 5-4 if the changes had been made earlier? Like, you can live in that kind of maybe this, maybe that, but coming back to score another two goals and get a point out of that game, that is to be celebrated to me.
Yeah, it shows a lot of character, shows a lot of resolve. It shows that there is a togetherness and unity there in the squad. You're right. I think the ability to make substitutions massively impacted our ability to change that game. I think to concede the two goals that we did in that second half, the penalty, and then 3 minutes later, and a counter-attacking goal, that would be enough to maybe shell-shock a team and they'll crumble. But we did actually the opposite. And it could have been 5-4 shot if the goalkeeper for Luton, his name escapes me, hadn't saved. It was an absolutely brilliant save down low from Harvey Barnes, which would have made it 5-4. And I don't think Luton come back from that. But you're right. I think that was the last chance. And then we seemed spent, and the game just completely got away from us. I think a lot of our goals are actually a bit more than decent, Si. I think that first goal where Miley sprays it out to Trippier and that ball into the middle, load of conviction, really just efficient football. Mm. It was beautiful to watch. I thought the third goal, the Travella pass from Bruno after a sustained period of attacking and pushing them in, it was about a third phase attack in the same passage of play. And that outside of the right foot and left foot volley from Trippier, who just sort of anticipates where it's going and just sneaks in round the back. I thought that was a really classy goal. And Barnes's finish for the fourth, I thought was, yeah, we mentioned Miley's winning the ball back and stopping what could have been another dangerous counter-attack from Luton. And he just got the ball. He knew exactly what he was going to do. You know, we're used to him using his right foot a lot, but to bend the technique that he demonstrated, to bend that low drive right into the bottom corner. He kind of caressed it in, he sort of passed it a bit, had a bit of zip, but it was really, really accurate, lovely technique, kind of made it look easy. That's not an easy finish at all, especially under the pressure that we were at that point. And yeah, it just felt that the momentum was on our side, and had Barnes put in that other one, but for a great save, I think we would have gone on to win that.
There was one other great chance at the end as well, where Bruno came out of the touchline, turned his man inside out, and got into the box. And Barnes actually made a shift back, and he just had to cut it back to Barnes there. We were like saying, cut it back. And instead, he goes across goal, and it was dangerous. And if anyone connects to that, it's a goal. And it lands to Murphy at the back post again. When he managed to get Villa to score for him when that happened on Tuesday, but it just couldn't get the right touch on it. But yeah, I was screaming, Barnes is there, just to cut it back. But that was it. Like you say, the last 15 minutes, including stoppage time, we just didn't have anything left to give, and Luton took over.
I mean, the Barnes finish was liquid sexuality, wasn't it? Outstanding. But the big positive for me is seeing Barnes come back, and also it's sad at the same time, because I look at Barnes and I think he's fit for the season. He doesn't get that injury. That's probably 8 or 9 goals there.
He would have scored 20.
Because you know what I love about him? Like, it's the confidence that he's got, right? Receives the ball, one touch, bang. He doesn't hesitate, And obviously, we do have a couple of players on the side, Miggy being the case in point, where it needs, two or three touches before the shot's popped off. And by that point, usually, there's a couple of defenders back, you've got to cut back, you've missed the opportunity's gone. Barnes is, in the classic sense, an incredibly sort of direct winger. And I think he's got a big role to play between now and the end of the season. So great to see that. It was good to see we come back from two goals behind. Any game in the Premier League where you're two goals behind to come back is a real achievement, right? And I turned around to the lad that I was with, Chris Murphy, and I said, look, if we get this equaliser before the 75th minute, we should go on to win the game. Reminiscent of Newcastle United versus Leicester City, 1990, 4-2 down. Mark McGee pops one in the 90th minute. Beautiful, beautiful time to be alive. I was 31 at the time. But it didn't happen. And I think this... it kind of ties into the wider point. We go a goal up, the intensity drops, they equalise. We're going to go up again, the intensity drops, they equalise, right? If there was ever a time for us to really try and hit for that, you know, two goals ahead, it was when we just taken the lead because they were there for the taking. We have the momentum, we'll come back, it's fours each. The intensity drops again, and we do create these couple of chances, but the intensity that we were playing with at 4-2 Dune, 4-3 Dune, it was gone again. It was almost like, all right, we've equalised now, we've just got to be patient and the goal will come. And it didn't, unfortunately, and that was the frustrating thing was, every time we kind of got a foothold in the game, they were there for the taking and we didn't build on it, and that was frustrating. Another positive, I suppose, you know, might be, if I want to end on a positive, that Ogbenia missed that chance at the death, which would have made it 5-4 Luton. So that was a positive that Dubravka got down and saved it.
It's an interesting one, that, because everyone's saying, well, Burn had to come off to deal with him, but he got in behind Tino there. You know, Burn wasn't necessarily the main problem. Ogbenna was just really hard to deal with.
Like, very difficult.
Livramento came on and gave us a bit more going forward, but he's not a complete defender. He still struggled against that guy.
What I will say about a positive, I do echo everything Norman said about Harvey Barnes, and what Harvey Barnes is a natural finisher, a wide natural finisher. Now, I tweeted before the game that I thought a front three of Almiron, Gordon and Murphy would actually cause a bit of havoc in Luton, and we sort of did. We did create a lot of chances, but what we weren't was clinical. What we couldn't do was finish, and what Harvey Barnes, what we were able to bring on in Wilson and Barnes, and I take your point with Wilson, I thought he was quite physical. He added a kind of focal point to that attack, and he used his body quite well. Thought he was unlucky in a couple of tussles, but to have somebody, like, I wouldn't say Gordon's not a natural finisher, but obviously he has so many positive attributes and good strengths. Murphy definitely isn't, and Miggy definitely isn't a natural finisher. But Barnes is, and you kind of just saw that. He's just got an eye for goal. His shot choices are really, really good, and he's always trying to find that bottom corner to make a difference. He's always trying to work the goalkeeper, and we just didn't do that enough yesterday. For Luton to have two more shots on target yesterday than we did in that whole game, despite us feeling like we were on top a lot, they were just more clinical and efficient when they went forward and took their chances really, really well. But yeah, a positive moving forward is to have somebody like Barnes, who is a wide finisher, especially if Gordon's twisted his ankle as well.
So in the first half, I thought that was a Trippier injury, because he was pointing to his ankle and signalling to come off, and I was like, no, like, not Trippier. And then Gordon seen on crutches. We haven't even touched on that Gordon was seen leaving the ground on crutches yesterday. But another. But yes, I think you're absolutely right that the hunger and the precision that Harvey Barnes is going to bring to this side is going to make the difference, I think, for the second half of the season. And it's right not to give him like 90 minutes of game time, especially as we've been told or read that he re-injured himself in the recovery process. You do want to be careful with an injury like that. But I thought he was excellent. I was really excited about his signing in the summer when he came over to Philadelphia, and then he was announced. He came on for about 20 minutes in the game in Philadelphia without any training with the team. He hadn't trained with the team. He hadn't run with the team. He'd obviously met them, but he'd been doing his promotional videos. So. And he just slotted in like that. He just knew where he was supposed to be. He was just, and I was like, oh, this is a match ready. This isn't an Eddie Howe, like, ease him in. So for him to have got the injury so early in the season was massive disappointment. But he's back now. And as Si says, he's going to score 20 goals.
Well, I did say that at the start of the season. And I genuinely think if he was fit for in all competitions, let's be clear, 20 Premier League goals would be some feat. But I honestly think he's got an eye for goal. And what we saw in the Villa game at the very start of the season was what he was going to do. He's going to come on, give the likes of Gordon or Wilson or whoever it needs to be to come off for 30 minutes and just punish teams when they're tired, and it worked perfectly against Villa, and it nearly worked perfectly against Liverpool, but for one where he should have cut it across to Wilson at the time. But he genuinely looks like the sort of player who's going to come off and punish teams and score goals late in games. I think he could have done that 20 odd times this season if he'd been fully fit. He definitely looks like a player, like you say, he's been out for 6 months and he's come on the pitch there, having not kicked a ball since September, and was class, and he made us so much better so quickly. I'm frightened of how good he could be and how effective he can be. You know, he was Leicester's top scorer last season, wasn't he? When they got relegated,
I think something like that, 15
or something.
Maybe.
You know, in a team that barely created any chances and just got battered most weeks. So I was really, really positive about what he could do this season, and I still am about what he can contribute for the rest of the season. That is a huge, huge positive. But I agree with caution because we absolutely cannot. I'd forgotten about the crutches and Gordon. Like, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think one of the big caveats of this game you have to continue to do, and yeah, Norman, it does feel like we're making excuses a lot and we can't keep excusing them, but we started this game without a centre forward. I thought Gordon did really well, by the way. He ran the channels and the run he makes for the second goal for Longstaff is brilliant. He's unlucky not to get the goal himself again. Gordon should get more goals for his name this week and last week, but we still started the game without a centre forward. We're still playing Jacob Murphy, who's just back from injury. He's playing 90 minutes again. Like, that's not good. He's been brilliant, but we saw signs of what we get with him. He's slightly limited, and he is still Jacob Murphy, and he had to move on to the left. And there are still problems in this team that we don't have an answer to yet. Barnes coming back, great. As soon as he's fit enough to start, he will start, and that helps. But until we've got a fit centre forward, Wilson, hopefully that 45 minutes has been critical for him. There are still problems, and Lewis Miley, bless him, I think he's getting worse every week, and this isn't a criticism of him. He's playing far too much football at his age, and I think his confidence is being kicked every week.
It's supposed to be the positive bit of the podcast. Yeah,
I know. But I just think it's a positive in the sense that these are excuses, mitigations, and things that will improve once we get solutions to them. And we're still limping along with some of these problems that we can't solve until we get more players back. So I guess that's my point in a positive way.
I get it. And I think you're right. We'll leave it there for part two of the podcast. We will break now for some adverts. If you want to hear this podcast without adverts, please do join us on Patreon. I have already told you how much, as you know now. We will come back for part three and talk about kind of the rest of the season and how we have to keep talking about the rest of the season, I think, sort of get meta with it. We'll be back after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Part three of the show, and I think we should talk about where this leaves Newcastle. You know, we have talked about that several times. Ninth. Norman keeps saying ninth. It leaves us ninth. Yes. Literally, yes. But I'd like to talk about the result and the performance in the context of the rest of the season. After Tuesday, you know, we sat here around this table and Ben said top four, top five after we beat Villa. We did beat them, Adam. And all the things that we had been pointing to, which is why the reasons for the bad performances in December, fatigue, injuries, etc. We are moving away from all of that, Gordon notwithstanding. We don't know sort of how serious that is, but those things should no longer apply because we are moving away from it. We're going to one game a week. Obviously, we've got the cup game, which is a midweek, but past that, we really don't have any kind of fixture congestion until the end of the season. And we've also got pretty, like, quote-unquote, nice fixtures to the end of the season. We have played a lot of the bigger sides, the top six sides, a couple of times now. Obviously, we've got Arsenal still to come. But all of those things should be kind of in the rear view. And yet, yesterday at home, this was kind of a shadow of the side that we saw last season, the home form especially that we saw last season. Luton probably should have won. They came smelling blood. They wanted that win. They came with a game plan. They were extremely physical. They were extremely motivated yesterday. I suppose the question is sort of where do we go from here and why are we reassessing it every single game? Like we did this under Bruce, like, okay, we've won this or we've drawn this or we've done that and that's left us in a better position. Sort of, Norman, why? Make some sense of it for me.
In terms of reassessing, I mean, look, we're football fans. That's just what you do, isn't it? After every game, you kind of think, well, oh, where does this take? Well, what can we do? Or you lose a match, you're like, well, what's the best we can finish now? Realistically, that is just something. I'm not too concerned about the fact that we're doing that, right? I think, and really, I think what the almost miracle is that despite the fact that we've had this terrible run of form, we are only 3 points off sixth. Do I think we can finish top five? No, I think the gap's too big. I genuinely do. But 3 points from six, to me, that is realistic, right? It's doable. We've got Brighton at home, West Ham at home, two sides that are going to be challenging for that sixth position, right? Two teams that we, you know, on our idea are capable of beating. And this is tying into positives as well. We've got, barring injuries, Gordon, as mentioned, but we do have players coming back, right? Joe Willock could be coming back. I think Joe Linton's done, isn't he? I think that's pretty much the situation there. Pope, I don't know what the situation is. Is Nick
March.
Pope? Mark, right? So Pope's going to come back, right? We do have these really important players come back. Alexander Isak, right? Massively, massively important player. In fact, arguably our only world-class player. That might be up for contention, but I think he probably is. So they're positives, right? Sixth place is attainable. Now, looking at the overall picture of the season, if we finish sixth, which is feasible, we beat Blackburn in the Cup, which I think we'll do. That's two quarterfinals, right? That we've got two. That's sixth in the league, which means Europa League. Also, minutes away from getting through in the Champions League to a certain extent, or at least being in the conversation. On reflection, given everything that's gone on with the injuries, that would actually represent a fairly phenomenal season under the circumstances, right? So, you know, I think I'm focusing on question number two rather than number three, aren't I? Mm-hmm. But positives are that...
We like positives.
There is still a lot to play for, despite how demoralising yesterday was, despite how demoralising the last few months have been. Actually, we're in February, we're 3 points off six, we're in the FA Cup fifth round, hopefully the quarterfinals. And there is loads still to play for, and there are players coming back. So where it leaves it is with something to look forward to. That's what I would say.
Yeah, like if we'd actually drawn at Villa Park, which I believed at the start of this podcast, and you've never let me live it down. if we'd have drawn at Villa Park and then beaten Luton, then the complexion of all the discourse following this weekend would have been completely different. Obviously, that's not how everything works, but we've got to remember that excellent, excellent win at Villa Park was just simply days ago. And I think there's been maybe an overreaction from some pockets. I can understand people being angry and they can vent and they can feel however they want to feel. That's their right. But I think that it was really, really important we didn't lose yesterday. It doesn't derail us. And I think if anything, that comeback, despite all of the negatives that we can poke about not tracking runners and poor defending and complacency and not finishing well, we can still continue this momentum with a draw. It's still part of an unbeaten run, and we can take that forward. And it's a demonstration of how we galvanized at a time that we really, really needed to, and we came through, and we rescued the game from a position that was looking critical. So I think if you'd flip the fixtures around, the results around, we wouldn't necessarily feel like it's sort of crisis mode, but I think it's okay. It's not great, it's not ideal, and we should have won that game. We didn't, but from that position of being 4-2 down to bring it round, to bring it back, I think that'll help us as a squad. I think that'll help us understand that everyone's still fighting. There's still desire and determination to finish as high up the league as possible. And Norman's right, it's been a season of nearlies, but we're still in the FA Cup and we've still got a really good shout of finishing in European qualification. If we can consolidate a cup run and a decent place in the league as well, I don't think that's a bad season at all.
I like the fact that you said it's not right, but it's okay, which I think is the first time TLC have been quoted in the Trophy podcast.
That is a Whitney song.
Is it Whitney Houston?
Yeah, that is not TLC.
Forgive me, R&B, paucity of knowledge. But you know what I mean.
I think I want to combine both your points there, because Norman's right that there's plenty of ways this could still be a successful season. I'd like to say going beyond the quarterfinals as well, we need to be in the FA Cup. It would be a great opportunity if we can get there, but you know what will happen. We'll get Liverpool away or something. But if we can get one of the big teams at home, you knock one of them out, yeah. I think we can do it at St. James's Park. I think we talked about the atmosphere before this podcast, didn't we, Norman? And it was quite flat again yesterday. I understand why. We're not the underdogs in games anymore. You're not going to get a proper 12-man experience at home to Luton. People turn up and expect us to win, and that's fair enough. It's a Saturday, 3 o'clock. You know, it's the middle of the winter. You're not going to get a raucous St. James's Park like you have done for the Champions League games before Christmas and everything else. It does mean we don't have any advantage. You know, we don't have that 12th man. It means that the players just, it's on them to win the game, and it doesn't always happen. I think we talked a lot before Christmas as well, to Adam's point, about 3 game weeks. It was just too much for this squad and all the injuries. But after Christmas, a week between each game, apart from this week, we've had a 3 game week and we've won at Fulham. 2 away games, we've won at Fulham, won at Villa, and then we've drawn at home. You know, it's not perfect, but it's acceptable in the context of that week, especially because we have still only got 11, 12, 13-ish players. Depends what happens with Gordon, but back down to 12 players to choose from. I'm okay with that. And I think there's, you know, going forward, it is 1 game a week pretty much for the rest of the season. There's a couple of fixture crunches and depends what the FA Cup. But basically, this team will be back on the training ground every week. And my God, there's a lot of material to work on based on yesterday. There's a lot of stuff they need to address in terms of how we conceded those goals, in terms of how we let Luton come through us so much. But I trust them to do it. And I think there's all the stuff we said in the last few weeks about that the lads just need to get back on the training ground. That is still the case. You know, after a 3 game week, we get a week to prepare for Forest away. We get a week to prepare for Bournemouth. I think that's okay. I think we'll win those games. I think we'll sort it out. So I'm not going to let this game in particular make me think the season's going to fall off a cliff again. It was a slight blip in what should otherwise still be a recovery, in my opinion.
100%. I think, you know, I think Norman's right. I think we need to zoom out and say, we do this every week. We do this every week with, as football fans, we think we recalibrate what success is. We recalibrate what we would accept as a good season. You know, we have been faced with mad injury lists. We've been faced with some just horrible adverse circumstances this season. And we're ninth. It's okay. We're ninth. We're still in a cup. We are 3 points off 6. Those things are good things. And it's not the super highs that we had last season. But that's okay. That's sort of what following a football team is about. And we knew that this season would be harder. We haven't made any signings in the January transfer window. We're not in January anymore. And so we just have to like push on and talk about it in the context of what it is, and that's just what we do as football fans. That's what we do as people who make podcasts about football. So I'm okay with it. I don't think it's reminiscent necessarily of sort of what we did under the previous manager. I think it's just what we do, and that's okay. We'll leave it there, I think, for the podcast today. There is so much more to talk about, so do come and join us on Patreon if you would like to. That is between £3 and £8 a month for lots of extra content. We're also doing a live show in Gosforth on the 16th of February, Friday the 16th of February. It's going to be lots of different people. I believe, Norman, you're going to come up and join us for that one.
I am, and I cannot wait.
You can't wait. We're going to do kind of interactive stuff, audience participation, chats about like just everything, really, and just try and make sense of this mad club. This podcast is brought to you by Aspers Casino Newcastle, home of the Mag's £4 pint, available on all draft beers for all NUFC home and televised games, 12 p.m. to 12 a.m. Over 18s only. Visit begamblerware.org. Be drink aware. For details and T's and C's, visit aspersnewcastle.co.uk.